When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Flora. Over the years, we have gotten a manure load of questions about a particularly divisive type of vegetation.
Grass. Like grass lawns.
Why do we all have lawns, and why is maintaining them such a thing?
How did that become a thing in the suburbs and everywhere that I can think of?
It's so weird to me to just have one type of grass.
Why not wildflowers? Why not just let the grass grow?
What kind of impact does it have?
Thanks, every little thing.
Bye.
Grass. People love it. People hate it. What should we make of it? Today, our colleagues from the Gimlet podcast, How to Save a Planet, have answers for you. They dug up the dirt on turf and provide some kernels of gardening advice. Here's How to Save a Planet host Daniel Ackerman talking to their listener, Meg, who inspired this episode.
Can you start just introduce yourself, who you are and where are you from?
Hi, my name is Meg Fox. I live in Boulder, Colorado, and I'm trying really hard to help the planet in any way I can. I love this earth and I want to see it survive humans.
So you mentioned Colorado is in a drought. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, what are the conditions like there, and what has it been like to live in Colorado the last few years?
Yeah, so the wildfires get worse every year. 2020 was obviously like the worst year for wildfires. We've just been having them horrible, like the month of April. We didn't get any rain basically the whole month. We're renting this old wooden house in the trees, so it's not a great feeling when wildfires are this bad and droughts are this bad.
And with no end in sight for the drought, some utilities have already raised the cost of water, and more are expected to follow. That means it's getting more and more expensive for people to water their grass lawns. Now, Meg is an avid gardener. She's in a bunch of local gardening forums, and she sees a lot of people worrying about what to do about these rising costs.
I hear a lot of people saying, hey, I just bought this house. I have this fresh new lawn, mm-hmm. and I cannot keep it green no matter what I do with this drought. The water's too expensive. Fertilizer's too expensive.
Which is leading people to do the thing that prompted Meg's call to the show. Tear out their grass and put in plastic turf instead.
Inevitably, somebody in the forum goes, hey, we got this artificial turf. It's great. We never have to water it, and it just looks green all the time. And I see the appeal.
It does sound pretty nice.
Yeah, it sounds pretty nice. I get the appeal. I get not wanting to work on your lawn. I really do. But I can't imagine that's healthy.
And finally, one particular lawn terror outer pushed Meg over the edge.
My brother was thinking of getting turf. So this was the main reason I went on this whole tirade about it, is my own brother, who hears me talk about this stuff all the time. He just was saying, caring for this lawn is a pain in the butt, and I want something easy, and I want something where there's not going to be like fire ants and bugs in my lawn, and I can lay down on the grass and not have to worry about that. But there's this whole life underneath the soil, just hundreds of thousands of microorganisms, and I cannot imagine a worse fate for them than being covered in plastic.
And all of this leaves Meg wondering,
when you're in a drought, you're going to be in a worse and worse drought as climate change gets worse. Like, what would be the best possible thing to do with your lawn?
To answer Meg's question, we called up a real live lawn scientist.
Yeah, so my name is Peter Groffman. I'm a professor at the City University of New York. I'm an ecologist, and I do a lot of work on ecosystem biogeochemistry, which are the fluxes of carbon and nitrogen and water in all kinds of ecosystems.
Peter grew up partly in suburban New Jersey, so he knows from lawns. And today, Peter is what's called a social ecologist. That means he studies more than just the biology or chemistry of the lawn itself, but also how people are using their lawns.
We've had just a fascinating run of research over the last 20 years or so about just what people are doing in their yards and what are the environmental impacts of that and what are the social impacts of that.
You know, I like that idea of social ecology, bringing the human aspect into it, because on this show we report on climate solutions, and it seems like when you bring the people into it, that's where you can create opportunity for solutions.
I mean, very, very much so. I mean, I guess it's true in all the environmental problems we deal with, but certainly the climate solutions are, we're not going to do very well by imposing solutions on people. Scientists, you know, are pretty good at telling people, here's what you ought to do, you know, kind of nagging or hectoring, which scientists are quite good at. It doesn't work. You know, you can tell people not to smoke. You can tell people what they ought to eat. You can tell people what they ought to do in their yards. But unless you really understand why they're doing what they're doing and what they value, and you have a real engagement with them, it doesn't work as well.
Peter and I chatted about how it's kind of trendy to hate on grass lawns right now. So I asked him for a fact check. Are grass lawns really that terrible for climate? And honestly, I kind of thought his response as an ecologist was going to be, yes, they are that bad. But his answer was more nuanced than I expected.
So this is a super interesting question and fairly complex, more complex than it seems on the surface.
Peter says we might think of grass lawns as just a form of decoration, but they're actually way more than that. Lawns do things, lots of things. And some of those things, according to Peter, are not necessarily bad for climate. Like in the face of a warming planet, grass lawns actually do something that's pretty useful.
So one immediate thing that lawns do that people sometimes don't think about enough is cooling.
Turns out grass lawns are like soft green air conditioners, or better yet, as regular listeners of this show will appreciate, like heat pumps in the summertime.
So there's a lot of evapotranspiration going on in the yards, and evapotranspiration is just a giant heat pump. It sucks heat out of the air and out of the soil and puts it into the water and sends it back into the atmosphere.
This is similar to how you cool down when sweat evaporates off your skin. Plants do almost the same thing. They lose water, it evaporates out of tiny pores in their leaves, and that process of evaporation cools things down. Basically, the lawn sweats as it's growing. And another surprising benefit of grass lawns, they suck climate-warming CO2 out of the air.
Yards have a surprisingly high potential for carbon sequestration. And in particular, it depends on what you compare them with. So if you compare them with a native prairie or with a native forest, they don't sequester as much carbon as a native prairie or as a native forest. But if you compare them with, say, an agricultural field, actually have more carbon in the soil and more carbon in the vegetation because the soil's not disturbed that much, and some of the yards have pretty big trees in them. So one of the surprising ecological amenities or services of lawns and yards has been carbon sequestration, a significant amount of carbon sequestration.
Can I dig into that, though? Because like when I think about what goes into a lawn that might be sequestering carbon, you got to account for the fertilizers, the maintenance, the gas that goes into all the lawnmowers. And it's kind of been like the bane of my existence the last few years working from home as an audio producer, leaf blowers.
Right. So anyone who's worked at home over the last couple of years realizes how loud the lawn equipment is. And yeah, they're making pretty good progress with electrifying that equipment, and which then would use less fossil fuel and would be quieter. But so people have done the net balance, right? So if the grass is growing, and especially if you have some pretty big trees in the yard, that's a lot of carbon. And the net carbon balance of the yards is good, that they are sequestering carbon. But you're 100% right. It's definitely a balance between the inputs that you put into it and then the amount that gets sequestered in the soils and in the vegetation.
Peter says lawns can also have another big benefit. They can help buffer some of the impacts of climate change. Lots of places are seeing more intense rainstorms and, as a result, more flooding. And that flooding can happen really fast in a hard concrete cityscape. But breaking up that concrete with grass can give that floodwater somewhere to go.
Lawns can be designed to soak up and infiltrate quite a bit of water. And so you basically make a depression in the yard that collects runoff from the roof or from the driveway, has it infiltrate into the ground, and that it reduces stormwater runoff.
So when it comes to the question, are grass lawns really that terrible for climate? Peter actually points to some of their benefits. Grass lawns can help cool cities in the summertime, they can suck CO2 out of the atmosphere, and they can help control flooding during heavy rains. Now, at this point, if you're thinking, okay, so grass lawns can do some of that stuff, but wouldn't native grasses or a wildflower garden do all that stuff better? Well, yeah, that might be best for climate from a purely ecological standpoint. Plus, it would create a lot more habitat for birds and insects. But Peter, our lawn expert, is a social ecologist. And he says you have to consider the people in addition to the plants. And the people?
People really like their yards. They provide a space for socialization. They provide a space for family activities. But people use their yards, in particular the grass.
As kind of like a personal anecdote for that, I have fond memories of growing up. I had a backyard, and in the summers, like, my dad and I, after dinner, would go out back and just, like, play catch. Just throw the baseball back and forth until it got dark. And I have, like, great memories of doing that.
So we actually have a term for this called the wiffle ball effect, right? Because...
Wait, you said like, the wiffle ball effect?
Wiffle ball effect, right? Because people want to be able to go out in the yard and throw a ball with their kid. and people forget about that, right? So as an ecologist... We say, no, the lawns are ecological deserts, and we need to do biodiversity, and we need to store carbon. And all that is true. The grass is ecologically a little bit dull. But grass serves a real purpose in people's yards because you can stand on it. You can run on it. You know, it's very resilient to human use. So if you plant a bunch of native species in that same yard, it's going to be very, very hard to play wiffle ball in those yards. And that's why social ecology is just so interesting, because I can study the soils and the plants, but it's the soils, the plants, and the people that's the real challenge to understand. And it's true for you know, lawns and water quality and air quality, and certainly for climate solutions.
So Peter says, if you can't bear to part with your own little wiffle ball field, or maybe there's just no public park nearby, a lawn isn't necessarily cause for climate despair, but there are things you can do to make that lawn as climate friendly as possible. Coming up, find out how, plus what to do and what not to do if you're in a drought and you want or need to tear up your grass. That's coming up after a break. Welcome back. Before the break, lawn expert Dr. Peter Groffman talked about grass lawns and how, perhaps surprisingly, they actually provide some climate benefits in addition to a space to throw a barbecue. So, for those of you who really want to keep your grass lawns, well, we've got some advice for you. There are some things you can do to make that lawn as climate-friendly as possible.
We can do pretty well on our lawns. We can maximize the benefits and minimize the disservices.
So first, if you've got the space, maybe around the edge, plant a tree or some shrubs. They're good for shade and for the climate. They suck some carbon out of the air. But it's important to think carefully about what kind of trees you plant.
So we would like to plant trees that don't use a lot of water. We would like to plant trees that might be adapted to the climate that's coming.
That could mean species better adapted to heat, maybe an oak instead of a cold, hardy spruce. And second, maintain your lawn as little as possible, says Peter. That means no fertilizer, which can run off into lakes and streams and can turn them toxic, and no pesticides. Do you really need to kill all those creatures that were there way before your lawn? Also,
there was an interesting article in the newspaper where they declared the month of May to be like No Mow May.
No Mow May, where you don't cut your grass that month, was started by the conservation group Plant Life in the UK, but it's since spread all over.
And if you do that, then all the grasses flower, and you get a lot more insects, and you get a lot more bees, and you get a lot more birds. And so again, if I mow less, it's less work, it's less carbon used, better for biodiversity.
In Peter's research, he found that lots of people are already doing just the bare minimum of maintenance. So much so that it's gotten a new, highly scientific name.
And there's a term called landscape mullets, and that there's really a big difference between what people do in the front yard and the backyard. So the mullet's a hairstyle, and it's business in the front, party in the back. And so in the front yard, this is my interaction with the neighborhood. This is the face that I present to the neighborhood is the front lawns, which tend to be pretty neat and well-maintained. And then there's a whole bunch of things going on in the backyard. That's where people play horseshoes, and the dog is back there. And so a lot of people are indeed trying to maintain, but they're trying to do it in a way that just isn't a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of effort. And that's been an interesting realization because we assumed going in that everyone was fertilizing their yards and that everyone was using pesticides on them. And there's less of that than we thought.
So those are some things to do if you want to keep your grass lawn and make it more climate friendly. But what if you live in a place where grass lawns just don't make much sense? Peter says there are three reasons why this could be the case.
Concerns about water use, concerns about water use, concerns about water use. I mean, it's just insane. There's just not enough water.
For example, parts of the American West are going through the worst drought in over 1,200 years. And in lots of cities, the majority of residential water use goes into yards. So some cities in the region are offering people money, like literally paying people to tear up their thirsty grass lawns and install something else that doesn't need as much water. And this isn't just a problem in the West. Parts of the Northeast have seen extreme drought this summer, too. Walking around my neighborhood in Massachusetts, I can tell you the grass is not green. And scientists say these droughts are becoming more common due to climate change. So if it's dry and you need to or just want to swap out your grass lawn, what are your options? Well, there's one solution that Meg called us about, one that many people in her area and her own brother are considering, plastic turf. And Meg is not a fan.
I just know that this has got to be like the worst thing you can possibly do to your lawn or to your yard or to any plot of land, really.
Peter more or less agrees. Plastic, of course, doesn't suck CO2 out of the atmosphere, and he says it doesn't soak up much flood water either.
It's like impervious surface, and it's just going to run like concrete.
Plus, plastic pretty much bakes in the sunshine, to the point where it can cause nearby homes to crank up their air conditioning.
If I take the lawns out and replace them with plastic, I save some water, but I'm going to use more electricity because the neighborhoods are going to be hotter.
There are records of plastic turf soccer fields reaching 200 degrees Fahrenheit, causing athletes to burn the bottoms of their feet through their shoes. To avoid that, Peter says one option is to xeriscape your yard. Xeriscape, that's X-E-R-I, like the Greek word for dry. And if you live in the arid West, you probably already know about this.
Xeriscape has a bunch of different definitions, but it means there'll be some native trees or shrubs, so cactus or other desert vegetation, a bunch of gravel or rocks in the understory, but there's no lawns, and there's no heavy water-using trees.
So if I were to xeriscape my yard, that would basically mean I wouldn't have to add much water to it.
Right, right.
So to recap, if you've got a grass lawn and you want to give it a climate-friendly facelift, plant a tree or some shrubs, and maintain the remaining grass as little as possible. And if you live somewhere where water's scarce and you want or maybe you need to tear up your grass, Peter says skip the turf and check out xeriscaping. But, yes, there's a big but to all this. Before you go judging your lawn-having neighbors for not swapping out their grass with something else, there's something to keep in mind. In some places, what you do with your yard may not be your choice at all.
There's rules at all different kinds of scales. Many people live in neighborhoods with homeowner associations that have specifications about what is acceptable yard practice. Mm-hmm. You have many places that pass ordinances where the yard has to be neat and cut to a certain height, and there's a bunch of that.
And Peter expects the fight over the future of lawns in America to be waged on these battlefields.
That is where a lot of the change plays out or doesn't play out. You're going to have the water utility is going to be paying people to put plastic in, and then a whole bunch of other town boards and the zoning boards and the conservation commission is going to be saying no, they're going to be fighting against that. So it's going to play out a lot at the level of ordinances.
Hey, who doesn't love a good ordinance fight? And actually, that brings us to today's calls to action. You can start your very own ordinance fight, or better yet, find and join one in your community. The National Wildlife Federation publishes the handy Guide to Passing Wildlife-Friendly Property Maintenance Ordinances. That's a mouthful, but it's basically a playbook to push your city or town to allow yards that are better for climate and wildlife. We'll put a link in the show notes. And if you're ready to tear up your lawn and you're looking for tips on native plants or xeriscaping, we'll link to some helpful resources. And if you've already done something cool with your yard, maybe you have a pollinator-friendly clover lawn, we want to see it. post a photo on Instagram or Twitter and tag us at @howtosaveaplanet. That's with the number 2, at @howtosaveaplanet. As for Meg, who sent us on this journey in the first place.
Meg, are you going to report back to your friends who have the plastic turf?
Oh yeah, I'm going to send them this episode as soon as it comes out. And especially my brother, who's the reason that I called in, because he was going to replace his lawn with turf. And I threw an absolute fit about it. So hopefully this will be enough to convince him that not replacing his whole lawn with turf, with plastic turf, is a good idea.
How to Save a Planet is a Spotify original podcast and Gimlet production. It was produced and hosted this week by me, Daniel Ackerman. Alex Bloomberg is away mowing his lawn. The rest of our reporting and producing team includes Kendra Pierre-Lewis, Rachel Waldholtz, and Anna Ladd. Our supervising producer is Matt Schiltz. Our editor is Caitlin Kenny, and our intern is Janae Morris. Sound design and mixing by Hansdale Shi, with original music by Peter Leonard and Emma Munger. Our fact checker this episode is Claudia Geib. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
That was the show How to Save a Planet. You can find it on Spotify. ELT will be back next week. And in the meantime, if you have a burning question, you know where to find us. 833-RING-ELT.